am Pedro.
And I am Meredith.
That's right. That's Meredith right there. Her voice ever softening as we begin to talk about, oddly enough, a film that I know I have a soft spot for. And nostalgia is going to push this to a higher review. I know you probably weren't surprised. Just before the show, we were testing sound files, and you heard a snippet of Ebert's review. It didn't sound very positive.
No.
It didn't. And I don't believe critics were very high on the movie at the time, really, either. But today we're talking about Twister, because the latest reboot just dropped with Glenn Powell and Daisy Edgar Jones. And today we were talking about the original film from 1996, the great billion-dollar summer of 1996.
Yeah.
Ellen Hunt, Bill Paxton, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Jamie Gertz, and Jan de Vont's Twister. I can say that off the top of my head without looking at anything, because I know.
Yeah. This movie is part of pop culture.
Yeah, so the disaster movie wasn't a thing. I mean, it had been dormant for a long time. It was a big deal in like the late 70s, early 80s, and it really died down. And after this, you got to see things like Volcano and Dante's Peak, which we've already covered in the past. I think that's the first twin movies that we ever did. Anyway, those were really spawned from the massive success that was Twister. Twister was one of the most successful films of 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And 1996 had Independence Day, some other things came out that summer.
And hell if I know.
Well, the Independence Day was the really big movie that came out that year. Mission Impossible, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Eraser, Michael Bay's The Rock.
Hmm.
One of the bigger Disney movies that year, too. I don't know if it was Pocahontas or something like that. Basically, I mean, that was a movie like that was a summer where like every week there was a movie making like $50 million. Like box office receipts just shot up that year. So I usually ask you about what your first memory of a movie is. How do you feel about me telling my story first?
I don't care. Go for it.
Thank you. So when Twister came out, it was literally the first time a multiplex had opened up in Corpus Christi, Texas, where I'm from. And it was a Cinemark Tinseltown, 16 screens. Before then, I think the largest theater was the Cine 6, which was basically like very much a big square, right?
Yeah.
And it had like theaters like evenly divided, and they showed seven movies. And that was about as big as it got, really, for the most part. You know, theaters weren't really real like kind of luxury experience, you know?
Yeah.
And Tinseltown was stadium seating for the first time, and the screen was enormous where they were showing Twister. We waited in a line with people, myself and my parents.
Back when you waited in line.
Yeah, back when you had to do that for a big movie that was coming out. We waited in line for, God, it must have been, I'd say like hour and a half.
Yeah.
Before we finally got into the film. We got really good seats because there was about maybe 40 people in front of us. But, you know, I mean, this place held a ton of people. So we got in there and it was just this cinematic experience that had to be seen inside of a big theater. And the step up in quality really was truly amazing for my young mind at the time. And because before that, I mean, we were seeing movies in Beeville. And the Beeville Theater was
two
screens, and that was just what would be like the size of a 7-Eleven, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was not a very big building at all. It was like a big 7-Eleven, and it was old school. In the front of the theater was just a big mono speaker that blared out the sound that they ran with the fucking, you know, RCA cable all the way from the projector to the speaker. So the sound was a little bit off always.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I saw movies there like that for a long time. And I remember once we went to the Cinemark, my dad rarely, if ever, went back to the Beeville two-screen theater ever again, even though it was 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
He was like, no, we will see movies here from now on. This is how they're meant to be seen. And it was just one of those things that was a movie experience that made me fall in love with cinema, even though if I was aware the movie was just... It was just good. Like, it wasn't, like, amazing. You know, it wasn't great. It wasn't Jurassic Park or anything like that. But, it, you know, it was fun.
A ton of people went to see that movie. A ton.
Yeah, this was like a massive weekend.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, it was a... It really was the start of the summer. I think it was May 10th was the opening weekend.
And I can't remember anything really bigger than, like, maybe, like, Titanic.
Well, Independence Day was the bigger movie of
the year. Independence Day.
Yeah, that was the bigger movie of the year, and it did very, very well. But like this set the tone. Like I said, it just, when the summer hit, like this made $50 million. The next week, like Mission Impossible made $45 million. It just was one of those things. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger had a down weekend with like only $40 million for Eraser on the opening weekend. It just, like, everything was this massive hit in that summer. It was just sort of wild. And, you know, we look back at this summer, everybody said doom and gloom to start because we had The Fall Guy, which underperformed, and Furiosa, which flat out bombed.
Yeah.
Everybody was worried. I think there was a Disney movie that didn't do well. And then, you know, now we Twisters has overperformed, and we just saw Deadpool. And as we've seen, that's about a $200 million opening weekend for an R-rated film. Mm-hmm. So they're back. It's just, you know, just how it goes sometimes. Sometimes you make movies that people have no interest in seeing. As cool as we think a Furiosa movie is, America was like, eh.
Well, you know, if you have a really cool introduction story to a movie, you can email us at grittyrebootcast@gmail.com.
That's correct. You can also search for Gritty Reboot on Instagram or TikTok and YouTube. To find our channels there, where you can follow us and find clips of the show, little musings I might have. And on YouTube, we do a little bit of game streaming. We don't do it as much as we should,
yeah.
But we do it on occasion. So, and we usually, I think we're still on Fallout because Fallout 3 is a massive game. It takes forever to beat. And I hadn't gone through it in a long time. And it's been fun to sort of revisit it. The nostalgia is kind of wearing off a little bit. And some of the older game mechanics are grinding on me a bit, I will say.
Yeah.
But, you know, there still is some real fantastic moments locked away inside that, in that old game, as there are a lot of games like that. You just have to deal with some older interfaces.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's done really well.
Oh yeah. There's something like some parts of the voice acting. The weakest voice actor is Liam Neeson, right?
Yeah.
He could barely be bothered to be there.
Yeah, I know.
He's like, the check cleared. All right, great. I'll say your lines. All right. So anyway, let's continue on. So MacReady comes out with the bloody underarm.
No, we're not talking about the thing. We're not
doing the thing anymore.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. You're obsessed with the thing.
I know. Well, you know, it's a great film.
There is a mystery. Elusive. Unpredictable. Violent. It terrifies most scientists. But for a new breed, the challenge is saving lives. The research is deadly. The laboratory is nature itself.
And potentially, could be a storm that has...
Had to do work to go back and find this classic trailer. All the trailers on YouTube were for the Blu-ray, or like the 4K Blu-ray that came out 2 years ago. And I like this old school trailer, because it's more about the horror of the tornado and the effects. Mm-hmm. The trailer truly is an effect showpiece. Meredith, there's got to be facts about this film. Do you have any?
I got a few. Are you ready for them?
Lay them on me.
All right. After Bill Paxton died in 2017, Spotter Network choreographed 200 storm chasers to spell out BP with their GPS tracker blips on a radar display to honor him. This kind of tribute had only been done 5 times before, and it was the first time it had been done for someone who wasn't a storm chaser.
Well, I think that's how big the movie was, yeah, to people that do this. So, also, Bill Paxton, a pretty likable guy, from what I understand. People really liked him, so when he passed, people had a pretty strong reaction to it. I got to see a picture of this just a little bit before we recorded. I was just Googling just a few random things, and I saw, you know, what they did. And it was a nice thing. It really was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost brought a tear to my cold, cold heart.
Do you know how they got the tornado sounds in this movie?
How'd they do that?
A recording of a camel's moan was slowed down and used as the sound of the tornado.
I would not have guessed that.
Filming in Oklahoma was briefly delayed due to the bombing of Alfred P. Murrow Federal Building in Oklahoma City on April 19th, 1995.
I watched a making of, and they covered this just, they touched on it the tiniest, yeah, bit.
Many of the crew went to the site to help with recovery efforts.
It's really strange when you have those real world events sort of touch a film and everything like that.
Yeah.
Or when you realize like a movie was made like, or some things were shot on like 9/11, or I always think of that Kevin Smith. There was a scene on Dogma. I can't recall what it is, but they had to shoot like a big important scene of the movie on the day Stanley Kubrick died. And like everybody on set was just generally bummed.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but you still got to work, you know, you still got to work and stuff like that. That's a minor thing like that, but you know, it's just the way things go.
A jet engine from a Boeing 707 was used to generate wind in some scenes. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised at all.
Jet engine, baby.
I know the first time they actually tried to do some of the things with the fan, they realized they were very limited on what they can do, because the more things you throw into there, the more wreckage there is that Bill Paxton has to avoid.
Yeah.
And so they realized, like, you know, when you get that realistic wind, you can't really put things that have any weight to them, because they could easily catch Bill Paxton in the chin and ruin a scene and hurt him. Yeah. Even if it's something you don't think is necessarily that dangerous, you know, with 50 mile an hour of wind behind it, you know, a shoe can, you know, really hurt somebody all of a sudden.
Days with Sunshine posed a problem because they did not make the background skies look suitably stormy. In order to fix this and prevent delays, several scenes such as the truck cab sequences had to be flooded with high intensity Klieg lights for better contrast. As a result, Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton suffered minor retinal burns through much of the filming. Ow.
Yeah, they had to put in these fucking drops, and they're like thick, like milk, and it slowly dissipates in the eye. And then basically, like, anytime the scene was done, they put on, like, you know, those cataract glasses.
Yeah.
So that was rough on them. I saw a picture of the rig that they used, and it's the middle of the day, like noon, and these lights are like throwing light onto people.
Mm-hmm.
With the sun out, and I was like, how fucking bright are these goddamn lights? I mean, like, the picture was just surreal.
Yeah.
To be like, I don't know how these lights can be brighter than the sky in the back, but that's how much they were really pushing out. So I'm not surprised they gave the actors those kind of issues. They were intensely bright. I would tell anybody to sort of see if they could Google those images. You know, you need HDR to really get the scope of it, but they were absurdly bright.
Well, let's talk about Van Halen. And you might ask, what does Van Halen have to do with any of this?
What does Van Halen have to do with any of this? That doesn't sound right.
Van Halen wrote two original songs for Twister, Human Being and the instrumental guitar piano duet, Respect the Wind, which plays over the end credits.
Yeah, don't be a bitch.
Van Halen were originally contracted to write five original songs for the movie, but this never came to be, as Alex Van Halen and Eddie Van Halen were both suffering from independent injuries, and vocalist Sammy Hagar wanted to spend time with his family in Hawaii. Hagar failed to show up on the day he reportedly promised to join the band in studio to finish the songs, which caused the band to come to blows that led to Hagar's departure from Van Halen. Human Beings was merged with an unfinished ballad titled Between Us Two, and Respect the Wind was written and recorded less than 24 hours before their contracted deadline with Warner Brothers was to end.
These issues would lead to one of the many breakups of Van Halen.
Yeah.
Van Halen, a little bit after this, would begin doing a few recordings with their old lead singer, David Lee Roth. They would get together and they would re-debut themselves with the old lineup at the MTV Video Music Awards, where David Lee Roth presented Beck with the Best Alternative Artist Award and infamously slightly danced in the background behind Beck while he was giving his speech. And people felt like he made a spectacle of himself, as did the Van Halen brothers, who had a massive issue with it. And it began another beef with another lead singer in less than 6 months.
Yeah.
And they eventually would part ways with David Lee Roth again and go on to find a new lead singer and never find the heights of success they had with either of those two guys. You got to play well with others is the key to the story.
That's, like I said, that's time and time again, the story of any artist band.
Yeah.
It just never ends. A bunch of egos getting in the way.
I'm assuming the Van Halen brothers at that point just assumed that, hey, we can take any bum and throw him in front of the band.
No,
he'll be a hit singer. He'll be, you know, we'll have hit after hit after hit. And that's not just how it works. It's just.
Oh, you absolutely can't. Yeah. You have to. I mean, it takes a real talented person to be the head person of a band.
They just assumed they could do that because they found, you know, somebody else.
Well, it's like the Packers.
Yeah.
We got two great quarterbacks.
That GM's going to be like, yep, this is the next guy. He's just going to assume he can sense him. And then he'll pick a bust and realize, you know.
And we got Jordan Love, so it's not like we're doing too bad.
No.
All right. That's our sports.
Well, we have talked so much sports on this episode.
Yeah.
What are you finally starting that sports podcast inside of our other podcast?
No.
Is this a spinoff episode? Is that what this is?
We would do Would we do football or would we do basketball?
I think we would just do our general sports. Well, whatever we would do, you know, you only can focus on the one season. So what do you think there's an easier time of us doing? Watch football or basketball? Probably football.
Yeah.
Because it's the one day. Well, not one day, many days.
Yeah, it's like
I gotta watch Thursday.
Monday and yeah, Thursday. Monday, Monday. Sometimes Saturday. Yeah,
it'll be a Tuesday game apparently.
Yeah, eventually it'd just be 7 days a week of football. And they play 30 games a season.
30 games a season.
Yeah.
Half of the players are androids.
Yeah, they might as well. In early scenes, when Philip Seymour Hoffman is sitting on a lawn chair, he lifts his leg in the air while laughing. His genitals were fully visible for a split second. It was edited out of the DVD and VHS release, but it was leaked from VHS screeners to industry professionals.
So you're telling me I just have to do a little digging to see Philip Seymour Hoffman's genitals?
You can. You can see his genitals if you'd like.
Okay.
You just have to work for it a little bit.
Okay. I don't know if we're talking about trying to find that footage or grave robbing.
Ew.
You just got to work for it a little. You said it.
Not what I meant.
Not what she meant.
All right.
Let's just whisper the rest of the show at this point. It's an ASMR movie podcast.
No. Ugh. Director Jon DeBont didn't want to work with famous actors because of their notorious demanding nature.
They also said no to the project.
Instead, going for a lesser known actors in order to not draw the attention from the tornadoes. He said the hardest actor to cast was Helen Hunt. DeBont really wanted her to play the lead because he loved her strong persona and ability to boss people around, which reminded him of a whirlwind. However, the studio was puzzled over DeBont's choice since Hunt was only known for doing TV sitcoms at the time, so they pressured him into holding additional auditions. DeBont said that these auditions were really embarrassing since he had to tell every actress who turned up that he had already set his mind on Hunt, and afterwards informed the studio that he was unable to find a suitable actress.
Well, props to him. Hunt was an odd choice, I will say that. I mean, I was young at the time, but even I thought that as I saw the movie, I was like, why do they have Paul Reiser's wife from Mad About You on Chasing Tornadoes? It's not the choice that I would have made, but it worked out quite well. Helen Hunt would end up going to win an Oscar a couple years later and have a pretty nice career for herself.
She's great, and I can see Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton together, so I think it's good casting.
Yeah, they do have good chemistry. It was a nice decision by Jon DeBont.
Yeah.
This was Jon DeBont's hot streak. It ended right after this, but this was the hot streak.
And sadly, that is all that she wrote as far as the trivia for this movie.
I don't think I have any extra trivia to add. I mean, this is one of those movies where there's literally like thousands of facts of trivia, right?
Yeah.
There's like things about the Twister Museum in Wakita. Like there's all sorts of weird
stuff. Oh, yeah. There's a bunch more facts, but yeah. I was like, you know, let me pick the ones that are most.
Well, I got that feedback once. It's like, well, there's other facts you could have brought up. I'm like, well, it's not just a show. We talk about the facts of the film.
Yeah.
Like you are editing down five or to three simple
facts. I'm picking like eight facts out of like 50 or 60.
Yeah, because there's a ton. Some movies you're going to go in there and there's thousands of things. What was it? The fog? The trivia section didn't even light up.
Yeah, there's some that just didn't have anything.
Yeah,
I would go to site to site and try to find stuff, but it's just nothing.
I'm always surprised some movies when you Google them, they have like a bit of a following. Like Deep Star 6, there's people like, yeah, I love this movie. You know, like The Fog was one of the few movies, the remake of that, where I don't think there was any fan art. There wasn't any blog post. There wasn't like a Reddit thread where people were like, you know what, this was underrated. It was just a barren wasteland of that film. But, you know, sometimes it just goes that way.
What do you think about getting this thing kicked off here and starting to talk about this movie?
Let's talk about this here tornado movie.
Sorry, I didn't mean to go all country on you.
We got to find out about these twisters. They're coming for us. They're going to take our jobs and our houses.
All right. I'm going to dial back the country and put the professional voice
back in.
Professional.
That's right. I will try to make my voice as Caucasian as possible. It already is. People are giving shit for it.
June 1969.
Nice.
Ominous music.
Very ominous. It's there's so much danger in this opening. That's how it works. Yeah. There is no score to this film. It is simply just a woman in a room making the sounds of a symphony while drunk.
Ominous clouds. Lightning. There's a tornado warning. It blares on the TV. A mother grabs her kid. They head to the storm cellar. The cellar is all the way across the yard.
Yeah, it really is. When they're planning the house out, this was a bad idea.
Yeah. All hell breaks loose, but they make it to the cellar.
And he can't get it open, right? Yeah, he struggles for a minute.
He does.
And it's like, isn't it just a hook? In a hole? Like, because when he locks it back down, it's like he doesn't do anything fancy. He's literally in there just holding it. He doesn't have a fancy locking mechanism. Which would have saved his life.
Yeah, which is a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the poor paw. He gets got by the tornado.
Yeah. So that's the first thing I thought when I saw the movie is like, oh no, the tornado got her paw.
Yeah.
It took him. And this scene was weirdly a late reshoot. They basically came up with this whole idea late. They had a different way they started the movie and tried to do this instead. I think it was Spielberg's idea to kill off the dad. Of course it was Spielberg's idea.
Yeah.
So, which sort of is weird if you think about it, right? Because it adds pathos to a character. And that's not in Helen Hunt's performance at all, that her father was taken by a tornado and she has this hatred. They just sort of added it at the end, but it's sort of whatever. It's not that deep a character study. But it's just something funny that I think to be like, you know what? Let's just add a whole new motivation to the character. Like Helen Hunt's like, oh, I didn't, nobody told me that. Is that a thing?
Now we're in present day.
We are.
Yeah.
It's 2024. We're recording a podcast. Oh, you're talking the movie.
No, I'm talking in the movie. I'm talking in 1996. We're back in 1996.
We're back in 1996 or present day.
Yeah, present day. It's the National Severe Storm League, I guess.
The League. And this is where all the national storms come together to fight evil.
No.
Oh, is that not what this is?
That sounds way more interesting.
It does, yeah.
But no, it's just a bunch of nerds that are tracking storms.
Trying to keep people alive. You're like, stupid nerds. Trying to give people an advance warning. Like, oh, look at your computer, nerd boy.
It's funny because it's not the first time I refer to him as a nerd.
I don't know why you are so hostile. I don't know why you're a stock 80s bully character all of a sudden. Hey, nerd. You do my homework? Give me your lunch money.
But yes, they are storm nerds.
Okay. Yes, the storm nerds.
Yes. And then we have, we finally get to meet Bill Paxton and his love, Dr. Melissa.
Yeah. And that's Jimmy Gertz.
Yeah. And they talk about meeting up with Dr. Joe, who is Helen Hunt, who is his basically soon to be ex-wife.
Yeah.
Because he wants to get married.
This movie does have a love story in it, obviously, between Helen Hunt and Bill, and a D love story, an uncoupling between him and Jimmy Gertz.
Yeah.
And the movie, I think its best step, because I mean, it's not a deep story, really. It's not. It's just based off their chemistry, which is pretty good. So that helps out a lot. But most of this is really done while the camera is moving around, and a lot of their banter is done while they're literally chasing a tornado. So with that, I think it's a pretty effective love story for an adventure film. Yeah. And I think this isn't like an amazing screenplay. But I always get really upset, and I think one of my least favorite examples of this is Star Wars Episode II, where they literally separate the plot to have romance scenes instead of having action scenes with some romance in them, like was so beautifully done in The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things that kind of drives me nuts. And this movie does it pretty well. This movie doesn't get a lot of credit for what the screenplay does for obvious reasons, but this is something I did want to compliment it for. A lot of the stuff between Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton is sort of improv between the two actors during big action scenes. And it's a really good way to get across their chemistry and how they feel about each other.
Yeah, I have nothing. I have no qualms against this.
This is the strongest part of this movie.
The romance in the movie.
I mean, even Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is a legendary actor, he's just fine here.
Yeah.
You know, he's just quipping. You know, he's nothing.
He's just Dusty the character.
He's Jack Black in it.
Yeah.
Even though Jack Black had yet to be created. He was created in a lab after this film.
We also meet the crew, the storm crew, including Philip Seymour Hoffman. Bill introduces Melissa to everyone and goes after Joe. But she runs around putting equipment together.
Yeah, lots of equipment.
He talks of signing divorce papers. He tells her he's getting married and he needs those papers signed, but she drags her feet.
Yeah, she's a little passive aggressive here.
Yeah.
But more charming than annoying about it.
Yeah.
So it's okay. You know, you can tell there's still some feelings there and she wants to give him shit for trying to move on.
Yeah.
So quickly. She does tease him and egg him on quite a bit. There's a line later on like, "Are you lost your nerve?" Where she's very much trying to get on his nerves.
Yeah. But she wants to meet Melissa.
He wants to size her up.
Yeah. Joe tells him about Dorothy.
Yeah.
And he's automatically interested. So whatever is happening with Melissa just melts away.
Melts away.
And he's all about Dorothy because he helped basically put this concept together.
Yeah.
So it's good to hear that there's some progress.
And by the way, this is one of the rare times you will see the official like art or anything from the Wizard of Oz on something that's not attached to that film. And that's because this is a Warner Brothers film and they own the Wizard of Oz. And even then, it was a fight and a half to get Dorothy on the side of that thing.
Yeah.
Or even to call it Dorothy. They had issues later on where I think like in the flashback, Joe's dog is supposed to be named Toto and they couldn't clear that. So they decided not to name it Toto. I think the dog's just unnamed.
So she shows him Dorothy, piquing his storm chasing sensibilities.
You can see it come out in the Paxton.
Yeah. Melissa shows up and starts asking questions about Dorothy. She doesn't know anything about tornadoes. So both him and Bill and Joe are basically like, "Oh, you little poor child."
Yeah, they do.
You don't know
nothing.
Very
much treat her like a kid.
Yeah.
You can tell she loves. But she's the audience's proxy. Mm-hmm. And she's the excuse why these very experienced storm chasers have to break down advanced concepts simply to the audience. And that's okay. That's just basic screenwriting. Anytime you're going to do a movie that's about any kind of science or anything like that, that the audience might not understand, you're going to have somebody explain some shit. Well, I mean, you don't really need to, but you're always worried about idiots if you're a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
And that's the way it works.
Well, we have a little action that shows up. There's a tornado.
A tornado. In a movie called Twister, shockingly, there was a tornado.
This is our first tornado.
The first one. The first one. Ring the tornado bell.
Yep.
I don't have a sound effect.
You could like chug your entire beer every time there's a tornado and you'd be fucked up by the end of this movie.
You heard it here first. Meredith supports binge drinking.
Well, there's also a scene where there's two tornadoes, so you'd have to do two drinks back to back.
Yeah, you'd have to Stone Cold Steve Austin it.
Maybe you should take shots.
You know what? Just do some heroin every time you see a tornado. Just go all in. Oh, is that too far?
Yeah.
Is that too far?
Jeez.
Okay, you're right. Fentanyl. Okay. Shows off the rails.
Yeah, because you ruined everything.
I did. I ruined everything. Yeah. I did fentanyl on the show.
No, you didn't. We do not condone any of that.
We do not condone any drug abuse of any kind.
No.
Fentanyl.
Yes.
But, you know. Why are you staring at me?
So now there's a tornado.
Okay.
And the crew is getting moving.
They're getting moving.
They're getting moving.
They're getting moving.
They all pick up in their vehicles. Bill talks about them being experts and like he wants to go with them. And basically, Melissa's like, "You want to go with him, don't you?" And he's like, "No. Yes, can I go with him?" Like a little kid.
Yeah. And I like Bill Paxton is a charming guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, oddly enough, he doesn't get a lot of chances to be really the lead in a movie like this. And he does a great job.
Yeah.
He really does. He does a great job. I'm surprised he didn't get more starring roles.
Behind Joe's convoy is Cary Elwes and his bad guys. Of the movie.
Cary Elwes are this lousy group of corporate funded scientists getting paid for what they do. Everybody knows the real scientists do it for the love of the game. Or at least that's what we're led to believe, right?
Yeah.
This is a really dumb idea by the script.
He's Dr. Jonas, and he comes with a convoy of his own.
They're all brand new, nice 1996 GMC SUVs, black. As opposed to like the raggedy cars that Joe and her group have.
Yeah.
So there's a big contrast between the two of them. I don't understand why a corporate back group of scientists are so evil in this plot, but they really are. Cary Elwes is barely anything. He only has like, what, 6 or 7 lines in the movie?
Well, he's also stolen a lot of the design for Dorothy.
He did.
Made his own and stuff like that.
But he's not much of a character, you know.
He's not.
Obviously, he's a secondary antagonist. The other antagonist would be the tornadoes, God,
I guess, nature. We needed him so some crew out there would die, except for the crew of Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton.
I don't know why.
I don't know.
Yeah, they just.
I don't know.
You're like, I just imagine the screenwriter typing. It was like, you know what they need? A bunch of corporate stuff shirt scientists to deal with. Yeah, that's what these raggedy group of outsiders need to deal with. It's a fucking stupid idea and a stupid movie. But hey, what are you gonna do, right?
They all end up at a small town where Dr. Jonas tells the media about his device, which is a knockoff of Dorothy. Bill goes over and knocks the hat right off his head and threatens to punch him.
If we can be fair, his little sensors have sails on them, do they not?
Yeah.
So this is the one thing that I noticed when rewatching this again, is he's really upset about that, but Dorothy doesn't have any sails on the sensor, so he took their design and made it better. That's called capitalism, baby.
He made a square box sensor instead of a round spherical sensor.
That's all you need. That's all you need.
That's the difference between the two.
Dorothy was MySpace, and his thing is Facebook. The Facebook at the time.
Whatever, dude.
You don't like it?
No.
Listen, I'm just saying, that's the way it should have gone down. That's the way I have it going down.
They get into it a little bit. Bill tells Joe she will give him one day.
One day to sort out his affairs with the tornadoes.
Yeah. He looks at the sky. Ominous music sounds.
There's a lot of shots of people looking.
Dr. Jonas shares info about the storm, but not really. Bill shifts and feels the earth.
I looked down at my notes for a second and I heard that, like, what?
It's not shifts, it's sniffs.
He's like, hold on, we're on a bad rotation. let me shift this here planet.
And he feels it.
Yeah.
He's feeling up on the earth.
He caresses the air.
The earth
moves. You like that, do you? I don't know why I'm having, in my head, Bill Paxton getting fresh with Earth.
That's the movie that's playing on in my brain.
I like your version better than any other version of Twister.
Well, Bill sniffs and feels the Earth. He's a storm soothsayer, if you will.
When it comes to these storms, he's always right about where there's going to go.
Yeah.
Like every... like call that he makes, like he's just like, wait, it's gonna shift, it's gonna turn. He's always right.
And then we have like a moment between Dr. Melissa and Joe where she basically confronts her and asks her, Melissa asks Joe if this is not a desperate attempt to keep him in her life. So she's like already seeing the chemistry between those two.
I mean, there is a love triangle in the film. It's not really really Jamie Gertz's character isn't of too much consequence to the film, right?
No.
Like, I mean, there's not much of a love triangle. Once he's out there with the tornadoes again, that's where he belongs.
He's kind of there for comedic effect.
Yeah, and like I said, to explain to us what these things are.
Yeah.
And that's it.
To add a little drama to it. Mm-hmm. Bill gets everyone moving and they're off. Dusty plays rock music, and Dusty is Philip Seymour Hoffman, if you didn't know.
And that's... the Van Halen song, I believe.
Yeah.
Playing here.
Melissa is a therapist and gets a call. Joe tells Bill Melissa isn't nice and Bill is suspicious.
Almost all of the comedy of Jamie Gertz on the phone talking to her patient doesn't work. Or really, it's just... I mean, I don't know if it worked better. The movie did not get good reviews, so I would assume it didn't work better in 1996. But like her, you know, just her therapy jargon, she didn't marry you for your penis and stuff like that.
Yeah.
None of that really works. The only joke that works is near the very end. I've got to go. We've got cows. And that's only because of her delivery.
Her Southern Belle delivery. Yeah. I love it. Joe insinuates Bill needed therapy and they argue and Bill drifts off the road. Bill tells Joe he's happy with Melissa, unsure if he's convincing himself.
Yeah, the movie sets it off pretty quickly that he is not in the happiest of relationships. And the movie is very early coding you to say, like, no, this is where he belongs.
Yeah.
So, which is fine. I mean, it's not necessarily a love story.
They go down a road and we see our first tornado of the movie. He goes through a field and gets close to them. They run into a ditch and end up in a little under. Yeah, because
this is
bridge.
Where she's like, "Have you lost your nerve?" And then he goes into the ditch to try to get closer.
Joe wants to get Dorothy out, but it's too late. The tornado passes over them. It slams the truck against the bridge, and then it's over.
Yeah.
But they survive basically being under this bridge and having their tornado just swirling outside them, destroying their truck.
Yeah.
Melissa is driving, and Joe's truck lands in front of her. She has to swerve to miss it, so that's where her truck went.
It's a fun cutaway. Everybody see my truck? Boom.
Yeah. And then they all come to see if Melissa is all right.
And she's fine.
Yeah. She's just a little shook. I would be shook up. I'm not a storm person.
That is fair.
I'm not a storm
person. Well, nobody's really a storm person except for these assholes.
There are people. Like,
well, yeah, well, these assholes, yeah.
I work with a guy that loves storms.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He goes outside every time there's a storm.
We had that bad hail. You were freaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were freaking out. You were like standing next to the window. I was like, get away from the window. Because
I was watching my windshield get destroyed.
And
I was like,
and there's nothing you can do about it if you take a piece of hail to your forehead.
Yeah.
I got you out of there. And then you and Maya were freaking out.
Well, it was so loud.
It was. It was very loud against that house. Yeah.
Yeah, and it destroyed our roof. We have it to did. Get our roof
fixed. Yeah, we're getting our roof fixed. Yeah, thanks a lot, Hurricane.
Yeah.
It wasn't a hurricane.
Joe asks what kind of coverage they have on their truck. And they end up piling into the truck. Melissa, Joe, and Bill.
So I do want to mention another fact about the movie that I do know is this enters the Dodge Ram now as the main vehicle for the almost the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Pretty much until the finale when they finally lose the vehicle. Dodge Ram sales spiked so hard because of this movie.
Yeah, and it can withstand a tornado.
Yeah, the level of hell they put it through. I think there was a Dodge Ram commercial with Bill Paxton driving through the house. Like, they made a commercial out of that. Like, it'll survive anything. And it really made the Dodge Ram one of the most popular pickup trucks of the late 90s.
It's a good-looking vehicle, too.
Yeah, I think it had a great look to it. And, I mean, that's just, I think people were like, oh, damn, it's a good-looking truck. It's a Dodge? I never thought about buying a Dodge before. You know, and that's sometimes all it takes. Something looking cool in a movie really can spark a trend. And, like I said, those were very popular vehicles. Will owned a Dodge Ram for many years, you know, probably for that very same reason. They were very popular in Twister.
Yeah. My best friend's dad was real into Dodges.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people
that's all he ever bought was
Dodge. The old man, before he bought that Silverado, he almost bought a Dodge.
Yeah.
Almost. But he's like, no, the Silverado, they made him a better deal to Chevy Blaze.
Jonas follows the storm. Basically, they're tracking another tornado already. There's already another tornado around.
Another one.
Jonas follows the storm as well in his corporate convoy. Bill notices this tornado is changing directions, calling it a sidewinder.
A sidewinder, which is pretty cool.
They continue to track the storm. We find out Melissa is a fertility therapist. They continue to track the storm. One tornado becomes two. A cow flies by, then another.
So this is one of the iconic moments of the movie.
Yeah.
You got a huge laugh in the theater. I do remember that.
They try to outrace the tornadoes, but can't. It passes right on the truck. Bill and Joe are thrilled, but Melissa is terrified. The crew talks about stopping in Wakita to see Joe's aunt. Joe says no. And
they chant for food in a really strange way.
Yeah. Well, I guess Aunt May is used to... Aunt May. That's her name, right?
Is it? Yeah, we'll say Aunt May. So Aunt May, once she was done training the Spider-Man, she moved to Wakita, where
all the tornadoes are.
Where every tornado in the world is, apparently, in this one area for the next 48 hours.
I know I wrote her name down somewhere, so we'll get it right eventually.
Aunt Meg.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough. May, Meg, same difference. That's my favorite shark movie, The May.
Are you done? Jesus. Jehoshaphat.
Jesus jumped up Christ. All right, come on, let's do the show.
Next scene is Aunt Meg's house, and they all are getting comfortable and eating. They see Jonas on TV and all talk shit. They trade stories of Bill, who is, they call like the crazy man or whatever.
Yeah, he's a wild one.
Yeah. Melissa is very surprised because she knows Bill is a different person, basically.
Yeah, she knows him as a weatherman.
They talk about the
dude.
They talk about the F scale for tornadoes. Only one of them has ever seen an F5 tornado.
And it killed her.
And it's Joe.
The way they build up to it, like, what's an F5? Everywhere the table stops, like, they just, all of a sudden, they're not scientists and they can't talk about data. It's really stupid. But it does build up the mystique of the F5, even if it doesn't make any sense for scientists to be afraid of a classification. Like, they can't even talk about it because it might spawn it.
We get a scene where Joe's upstairs taking a shower and she's in the shower. And then Joe
gets her tits out and everything.
No, she
doesn't get her tits. She's flicking the bean in there.
Wow.
No, is it, we're not doing that?
Is this like wishful thinking? Joe's aunt tries to cheer her up about Bill and basically tells her, you know, he's here. There's only one reason why he's here. And it's because of you.
Yeah. Which is pretty much true.
Yeah.
So this is a rare time the movie slows down entirely. And so it's for Aunt Meg or May. We're not really certain.
Yeah, because we come back to Aunt Meg in the future because there's stakes.
Her stakes.
Yeah.
Are in danger.
I said there are
danger stakes.
No, not stakes. There are stakes as in like bad. There are a lot of stakes. God damn it. You did this. You did it.
Yeah.
Not the kind of steak you eat is what I meant.
Yeah. The shows. It's the worst show I've ever done. So later on, you could say her steaks are dangerous and rare.
Dusty screams. They got one. A tornado. They all run off to catch it.
How did he scream?
They got one.
They got one. He runs in the room and he whisper yells as loud as he can.
Well, I don't want to like yell and blow everybody's eardrums.
That was a poorly chosen pause. Man, this show is off the rails. All right. So yeah, he runs in there and says that and they immediately run off the dinner table.
Yeah, Melissa rides with Dusty and Joe and Bill ride together.
Yeah.
Bill has to put a belt around Joe and their chemistry can't be ignored at this point.
Is there any context for him putting a belt around Joe?
Any context? I think they're trying to get into contact with their other dudes in the trucks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You mean a walkie-talkie pack?
Yeah.
Okay. And so he's like, he puts a belt on her. I was like,
Puts a pack on her.
Okay, good. I was trying to imagine that scene. I was like, I don't remember him. Like, hold on. Your pants are slipping down. Let me put a belt on you, Joe. I was like, I'd remember that scene.
No, that's not what I meant. Like a belt pack.
A belt pack. Okay. A pack of belts. it's got a six pack in case. Her pants keep falling down. They won't stay up. Okay.
Rabbit is leading them to the tornado, and he's one of the guys that has the maps and whatever.
Yeah, he's the guy who got mad earlier about the creases through Wichita.
They come out of a cornfield and run right into Dr. Jonas and his corporate caravan. Bill makes him turn. Tornado touches down right on the road they're driving on.
Bill does more of his soothsaying, right?
Where he's like,
this road will take us to the... I can feel it.
Yeah.
I've got the sight.
They say that the storm could eventually become a half a mile wide. Joe decides to go for it, and they get ready to be in the path of the storm. They got hail.
Yeah.
They have an upblow. Bill gets in the back and preps Dorothy, but there starts to debris falling.
Debris?
The tornado forms and then doesn't. So much drama happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of yelling and stuff back and forth to each other as they're getting everything ready. And Dorothy fails either way, and then the tornado just dissipates.
Joe wants to get closer, and she does. But Dorothy is stuck, and the tornado is too close. Dorothy falls off the truck, and the tornado disappears. But they hear roaring still. Joe wants to pick up the sensors, but Bill gets them to safety. Bill and Joe get in a fight, but they talk, real talk. Bill tells Joe that she needs to stop living in the past and to look at what's in front of him. What's in front of her, him. And basically there's a shot of Melissa, and she's like, here's this whole thing.
She's like listening like, oh, this is super. That's exactly what I wanted to hear my future husband say. All he's doing is talking about how much he loves his ex-wife and putting belts on her.
So many belts. A bunch of nerds are looking at monitors again.
Nerds?
Well, we hearken back to the nerds that we saw earlier.
Yeah.
These are the same nerds.
These are the same nerds. Not different nerds, but the same ones.
Yeah. They're monitoring a storm. And then the ominous music comes.
More of that.
The crew lands at a drive-in and they get some food. Joe orders 8 coffees to go and sign the divorce papers.
Yeah. I like how you wrote down in your notes how many coffees she grabbed.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a minute. That's an important fact. That could come into play later.
Well, I always thought like, damn, that's a lot of coffees. She's going to have to carry all those coffees back. I'm like, how is she going to do that?
They'll give her like a carrier.
Give her a couple of carriers?
Yeah.
Or she takes a few at a time and then goes. That's what I was thinking when I saw it. So I guess.
I want you to know that I'm officially dropping the Gritty Reboot name and we're going to be all about drink carriers from now on. A drink carrier exclusive podcast.
Yeah. Bill comes up to Joe and talk about Dorothy. They hear a rumble and the TV cuts out. Lightning picks up and a tornado is right on top of them.
Lots of shots with all the actors looking out into the distance.
Yeah.
Before they realize.
Joe wants to see it, so she goes closer. But she snaps to and warns everyone. Everybody rushes into a garage as the tornado rages towards them.
So there's a moment, I think Dusty comes running out like, it's coming, Bill Paxton. It's already here!
Yeah.
And you get a really cool shot of the tornado coming through the drive-in, which, by the way, by 96, drive-ins were pretty much a dinosaur. It comes rolling in, and it destroys the screen, which they're showing Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. Jan de Bont always likes to have a reference to Stanley Kubrick. And for a few moments, The Shining is playing on the tornado as it's spinning through. And it's a pretty nice effect.
Yeah.
I guess we haven't really talked about the effects because they hold up pretty well. There are some moments where you're like, ugh, but, you know, where some things don't really hold up as nicely as you might like. But for the most part, these effects are pretty solid.
Yeah.
And because it was 1996, really the tornado and a few elements of the debris are CG. Most everything, and the sky replacements, like you mentioned earlier, most everything else is pretty practical in the film. So, you know, it does a very tactile feel when a car is coming at them. It's really a car.
The garage that everybody's in slowly falls apart and collapses. One of their team members gets hit in the head with a hubcap.
Almost gets like his
like scalp.
Scalped, yeah.
Yeah. A truck gets thrown into the garage.
It's a pretty intense scene. Like, Michelle, Jimmy Gertz's character, she's just like screaming during this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fair. I mean, this does seem terrifying. Like, if I was there, I'd be like, yeah, this is it.
And then we go to Aunt Meg, and her wind chimes are starting to go nuts. The tornado is over there, and they are taking stock. They notice the tornado is heading to Wakita. Bill and Melissa part ways. So there's a scene where Bill and Melissa are talking, and Melissa's like, basically like, dude, I can see the chemistry between you guys.
She's like, I know there's not.
I'm not stupid.
Like, I know there's not a spot for me in this third act.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just leave the film and never be referenced again.
I can't do this tornado thing. And you seem to love this tornado shit.
Yeah, which is fair. I mean, it's a lot of stress to put her through. And she's out. And, you know, like I said, I appreciate her performance in the film. She helps some of this sort of cliche 90s therapist character.
Yeah.
It's not a great character, but I think she does a good job elevating that material. So she leaves the movie and, you know, we do lose that character, but it, you know, once again, we are focused on more important things at this point. We were lucky to have Jamie Gertz do a good job.
They're back in Wakita and it's a wreck. Nothing is standing. Yeah. They find Aunt Meg's place and Joe rushes up to it.
This is real impressive in the behind the scenes of them literally just trashing a town for this.
Yeah, they built like a bunch of homes.
They bought a bunch of homes.
Yeah, they bought like 10 homes.
Yeah, they bought a bunch of homes that were just empty or set for demolition and just destroyed them in different ways and stuff like that. And then brought in a bunch of trash.
They also built more homes.
Yeah, they built a bunch of stuff. It's like I said, that's the one thing I appreciate about this era of Hollywood filmmaking, that early combination of CG. There's still a great ton of magic done with practical work.
I know.
Like just building these sets. Because at no point do you ever doubt this is a town destroyed by a tornado, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we see it a lot where they step somewhere and you can feel the green screen, you know, and then they ain't none of that shit here.
Well, Helen Hunt rushes inside and Bill is basically on her heels. Mm-hmm. The house is very dangerous. Shit's fallen and broken everywhere. Ceilings collapsed, but they do find her. She's bleeding from the head, but they get her out before the ceiling before the house collapses for good.
While we were doing the research for this, I watched an Entertainment Tonight segment from back in the day, and it's Bill Paxton giving an interview in the slanted house.
Oh.
So he would be like laying down on like the chairs in the wrong way. That's how they were actually like in the set, to look upside down and stuff. So it was kind of a funny thing of him just walking around what was going to be this set here.
Yeah.
So
Aunt Meg talks about having no warning. Dusty gives Joe.
If only there was something that could give her a warning.
Yeah.
If only her paw had a warning. We're just kind of tying this all back together, folks.
Dusty gives Joe the news that there is a F5 coming.
And everyone shits themselves.
Joe looks at her aunt's wind chimes and thinks she knows how to make Dorothy fly.
Okay, so listen, you know how I feel about these things in movies when a really smart character makes a revelation? It should feel intelligent, right?
Yeah.
You should be like, oh, that is clever. What a fun idea. The idea that in order to get these sensors to go into a giant tornado, a vortex of wind. If you will, that maybe these sensors might need something to help them float in the air. The idea that she hadn't come up with that until this moment is ludicrous.
Yeah.
Absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid.
Yeah, I don't understand, like, why she... Well, should we put a little something on it? Yeah, let's give it a shot.
You would think they would have tested it somehow, because you can buy, like, little wind machines.
Well, once again, Gary Always, their version, their sensors had little sails on them. So this isn't a revelation. She had just seen it earlier.
So it soars...
It wasn't until this viewing that I realized it was all Pepsi products.
Yeah.
And Pepsi product placement. I had no idea.
They're doing this so it soars better. They get Dorothy ready to go towards the tornado. Joe and Bill head out, and they get Dorothy out just in time. But it tips over, and tree heads towards Bill and Joe, and it knocks them off course.
So they have this never-ending spawn of Dorothy's. There's a factory somewhere inside of that RV just spits out Dorothy units, because they just lose another one.
Well, I think, you know, they lose three total, and their fourth one is the one that wins.
Well, they lose them all.
Well, technically.
Yeah, technically. No, literally.
But their fourth one is the one that gives them the sensors.
The data, yeah.
Yeah. They see a tanker truck head towards them. It gets picked up and thrown in their path, exploding. They decide to use their last Dorothy, Jonas. But Jonas is in the path of the storm. Joe tries to warn him, but he's not listening. Bill tries to warn him. Then they get sucked right up into the storm.
I like this moment when he finally uses his soothsaying for good. And like him trying to appeal to Carrie Elway's driver in the vehicle.
Yeah.
And him even going like, he wouldn't lead us into danger. Like he wouldn't, like he wouldn't get us killed or anything like that. He wouldn't tell us that if it was bad info. And I like the little back and forth. So Carrie Elway's character has to make the choice to get them killed because he's a corporate douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a good back and forth between the two of them. And the CG effect of them getting sucked up and thrown around and eventually exploding is pretty cool, even for 96.
The storm picks up a bunch of tractors and slams them down on the road in front of them.
And once again, no CG here. They literally just drop some tractors right in front of a stunt driver.
They drive through a house.
Yeah. They drive through. That is CG and practical. They did drive through some house and they CG'd like more elements of the house to make it a little more realistic and not look like a set. It's combined quite well. Like I said, it's tough to catch where the seams are for the most part, even on a 4K transfer.
This time, Joe gets Dorothy ready as Bill drives. They need to get into a cornfield towards the tornado. They set the truck and bail out, sending the truck careening towards the tornado.
Yeah. Helen Hunt got a nasty concussion on that dive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the door.
Yeah, they're actually driving through a fucking cornfield. Once again, this isn't some green, it's not green screen or anything like that. They're in a cornfield and she opened a stalk of corn, but it pushed it right back into her. Corn's tough, people. Like, you see that in movies, like, just run through the cornfield. You don't just run through corn, right?
Cornfields are really creepy, too.
Yeah, yeah. Like corn will mess you up if you're running through it, just hitting your shoulders.
You can't see anything.
You're blind.
They're really tall. Yeah. All you can see is the sky.
Yeah.
And like, it's just really difficult.
Yeah. So I always say it all the time, to run through the cornfield. Like, well, you can't just run through a cornfield, like running through the forest at night. It's a good way to get yourself killed.
Well, their efforts work and the sensors go right into the storm.
They fly right into it. We get the victory music and everything like that as the crew, Philip Seymour Hoffman and everybody like that, is seeing all the data light up.
The storm is shifting again. So they run through the corn.
Yeah. Nice moment where it shifts and they're like, oh, shit, we got to go.
It shifts to a local farm thing to find a salt. They try to find solace at a farm.
Real showpiece for the effects is a slow-moving, gigantic black tornado.
Yeah.
This darkness moving through, destroying these giant barns and everything like that. It feels like there's thousands of elements of debris flying around.
Yeah. They go into the barn and nothing, everything's there is sharp and blunt.
Literally the worst place.
And it's just the worst place.
Yeah.
They go for it and run like hell. They make it to a shed. They strap into the pipes with leather straps and hold on.
Yeah, these pipes go deep into the ground.
This is my least favorite part of the movie.
This is the dumbest way
to end
this movie. Because
they would be shredded by all this fucking crap.
The whole movie is about debris, talking about the debris coming in. We just showed while they were in the barn, like pieces of the picket fence coming down right through the barn. We've shown that this tornado is dangerous for what's inside of it.
Well, it's like a piece of grass was found like in through a board.
Exactly.
On a tornado site at one time.
Yeah.
You've got stuff going 150 miles an hour.
Yeah, an egg that goes through a concrete wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. They should have been decimated by the tornado, but they just fly through it.
And yeah, they just kind of float up in the air and they get this pretty look through the middle of the tornado and none of the stuff hits them or anything like that. And it dissipates and that's the end of the movie. Oh, they kiss.
Bill and Joe make it out and that's the end of the movie. Their buds pull up. And they make out, and that's all she wrote.
Mm-hmm. Bill Paxton whips it out, and the movie gets going.
No.
Yeah, he's like, here's your twister. No, he doesn't. He doesn't helicopter it.
Do you want him to?
Did I desecrate his memory by asking him to helicopter?
Yeah.
1996.
You gotta have a long penis for that.
You do. That is the key to the helicoptering. You're more just flicking a switch if you'd have a short one. You're not really helicoptering anything. You're just click.
All right. I'm glad we had this talk.
I'm glad we had this talk, yeah. Too. So let me ask you something. Were you disappointed that when the tornado dissipated, Joe's father didn't reappear to reconnect that story together?
Yeah, like there's like the end of Star Wars where you see the ghost.
Yeah.
It's just a ghost of her paw.
Yeah. He does it. All of a sudden, he's like, oh! He just comes in with the door and he breaks his paw. He's like, oh my God, I've been gone for 30 years. What? It's not a Captain America thing. He's just been floating in the sky.
He's not been in another universe.
He hasn't been in another universe.
There's no multiverse here.
So you're okay with that storyline going unresolved, that she killed the tornado and she didn't even get her father back.
Yeah.
It's worse than The Flash when the end of the movie didn't find out who killed his mom.
They probably found his body like miles away. Paw's body.
Wow, why do you make it dark? I'm making jokes here about the movie being unfulfilled and you're like, they probably found his body miles away. The creatures had already gotten to his eyeballs by then, I'd assume.
Really? Wow. All right. So this movie.
Numerical rating of Twister.
For me, this is a 7.5.
I have to give it I'm not going to give 0.5s. It's already stupid. We already go through out of 10.
Yeah. Well, 7.5.
So I will say, so you give it a 6.
No,
I'm going to give it a 6. I think it's a really watchable, entertaining summer flick, but that's about it.
It's
a
so
groundbreaking
fun.
Film for effects. It can be fun, but you know, if you don't have nostalgia for the movie, this could be a rough sit through because it's not the best story.
I have both nostalgia for this movie and I think it's fun. So the reviews for this movie are 4.3 user review, 66% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb. And I pulled a 1-star review for this week's reviews. This review is called He's In It for the Science. This movie is completely absurd. It is a ridiculous love story set in Tornado Alley in the Midwest. After reading some of the comments from my fellow reviewers, I see why this crap fest is rated so high. It is made to appeal to foreign markets and the young and or stupid American market, a large market indeed. In my opinion, the release of Twister is in 1996 marked a turning point in Hollywood. It became apparent to movie makers that it really didn't matter if the dialogue was brainless or the plot was full of holes. It doesn't matter if the actors could act or if the script was convincing. What matters was how loud and violent a movie could be. We in America love our violence, and it translates well into any language. Since foreign markets make up a large percentage of a film's profits, it must make sense to create long action sequences with little conversation or plot as possible. In fact, Twister would have been improved had there been no discourse at all, just people fleeing from the hundreds of tornadoes that terrorize the American Midwest every day. I can't wait for Twister 2. Maybe Carmen Electra and Ashton Kutcher will be in it, and there will be a lesbian subplot.
Jeez.
In short, if you have a nice home theater with surround sound and would like to have your intelligence insulted, I recommend giving Twister a go. Otherwise, stick to something cerebral like the recently remade Starsky and Hutch. I know. Something cerebral. Carmen Electra is in that, and she kisses another woman. No corporate sellouts here, baby. It's all about the science.
It's all about the science. That motherfucker acts like bad movies never got made before Twister happened.
Yeah.
And Hollywood never made a stupid movie just to get some grosses up.
Yeah.
This movie is pretty stupid, but, it's an effects ride. So if you're not down for the effects ride, then yeah, it's going to be real fucking stupid. It's going to be a long, long go for you if you don't like this kind of movie.
But yeah.
I think it's a better example of a disaster flick.
Yeah. And then we'll see Twisters next week.
That's right. Yeah, we'll see Twisters next week. And, this was a fun trip down nostalgia lane.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to be able to see this one again. And I've always appreciated the fact that, the show's not over yet. How can I forget about Roger Ebert, who in the year 1996, can you guess? Can you guess, babe?
He hated.
He was very much alive.
He was, yeah.
He was alive, yes. He lived, as did Gene Siskel. And together, they reviewed the cinematic powerhouse that was Twister. And together, they combined and gave it an awful, awful review. And I remember their awful review from back in the day. I wasn't really surprised when I looked it up and found that they didn't really care for the film. But I guess it's nice to hear their complaints and what most critics probably thought of this movie back in the day.
Down in the pit! Get down! Let's go! Everybody down! Go! Move! Come on!
A team of tornado-obsessed scientists encounters the windstorm of their dreams and nightmares in Twister, one of five new movies we'll be reviewing this week on Siskel and Ebert, along with Winona Ryder having an affair with a high school boy, also Julia Ormond and Tim Roth having an affair while he's on leave from prison, and Johnny Depp in a truly offbeat Western. I'm Gene Siskel of the Chicago Tribune.
And I'm Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times. Our first movie is Twister, a film about storm chasers on the trail of deadly tornadoes. As the movie opens, Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton play a couple who are on the edge of finalizing their divorce, but still share one crucial thing in common, an obsession with tornadoes. He only went to see her to get her to sign the divorce papers, but a big storm front comes through, and here they are chasing twisters again.
Are you mad?
I'll be mad later. Right now, I'm trying not to kill it.
We're not getting sicker. It's moving fast. Coming towards you, Joe.
A lot of the scenes in the movie look more or less like this, and I guess you aren't supposed to question how they miraculously seem to escape serious injury, even while they're in the eye of one storm after another.
Mike, something to grab a hold of!
I know!
Ebert's already throwing a flag on any realism in this movie.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I still enjoy this movie.
When they're not in tornadoes, they're cleaning up after them. For example, when Helen Hunt's aunt, played by Lois Smith, has to be rescued from her home.
Okay, ready?
Watch your hand, watch your hand.
Go! Go! Oh, you guys.
Oh. Easy, easy, easy.
Easy. Easy.
Oh, God.
The best thing in the movie are the great special effects. In fact, they're about the only thing in the movie. Now, I'll say this about Twister. You get your money's worth in the special effects department. Twister starts out with a tornado and keeps on throwing tornadoes at us for 117 minutes. I felt like I had spent an eternity in weathercaster hell. In between, there's a silly plot involving Paxton being caught between his first wife and his current fiance, but with twisters arriving every 20 minutes, who cares? At one point, the fiance just gives up. There's a great line where she says, "When you told me you chased tornadoes, I thought that was a metaphor." Well, if so, it would have been the only one in this movie. I admired the special effects in Twisters, but not enough to recommend the rest of the film.
I had the same reaction, Roger. It is a ridiculous story surrounding the Twisters. Now, think about it for a second. You're making this movie.
Yeah.
You're farming out the special effects to ILM,
yeah.
Industrial Light and Magic, the best special effects house in the world.
Yes. The best.
You know they're going to be great.
Yes.
So why not take your time and write a fresh story,
yes.
Something exciting around it? It shouldn't be too great a challenge. This cornball business of the marriage that's going to, you know, come together as they fight the Twisters and then toss away the other wife. And then the rivalry between two groups, one in black cars and the other in
the bad guys. The bad guys have corporate sponsors.
Yeah. I mean,
at least Ebert had my complaints.
The old person in a movie, only there to be a victim.
Yeah, here's another thing, Gene. Remember the invention they have called Dorothy?
Yeah.
Which is going to have, they have these little spheres that have sensors inside that will be sucked up into the tornado and be able to read it.
It looks like R2-D2, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then when they have to get it out of the pickup truck, two people can lift it easily. That's interesting. And then I realize all the blinking lights are just window dressing. Basically, this is a garbage can filled with little plastic things that the tornado is going to suck up.
Unbelievable. So now let's recap the movies we reviewed on this show. Two thumbs down on Twister. Only the special effects work in a predictable story that teaches us actually absolutely nothing about tornadoes. Two thumbs up for Captives, a tense love story.
So yeah, they were not real thrilled about Twister. And I mean, they had a lot of the complaints that I kind of point out to the movie, but I guess at the end of the day, they didn't really bother me all that much. But they didn't have nostalgia for it. It was just a stupid movie they had to watch back in 1996. Yeah. It's a stupid movie I've grown up with, so I kind of love it.
I love it, too.
Kind of. But that is it, gentlemen and ladies. Next week, we will do Twisters. And after that, we'll do Clockwork Orange. No, it's not true. But we will be doing Twisters next week. So look for that.
Yep.
As we complete the Twister cycle.
We're going to party next week.
We're going to party like it's 1996. That's not how that goes. All right, guys. See you.
Bye.